Sit out the day tomorrow. Let them think we're ready to take anything on the third day. Early meal at evening.
Truly, but the Anglos are the masters of cunning and deceit that our fathers warned us against.
Up here and out the window. Over the flat roof, into the alley, up through the fog if it rises every night. We can circle around and the patrols won't be alerted like tonight.
That's the plan. Anyone got anything to say? Things we should do? Maybe things we shouldn't do? Anything?
Only usual things. Dark clothes and greased weapons. Lori to cover her hair and muffle the bells on her spurs. Doc to grease his knees to stop them creaking.
Well, that's it then. Around this time tomorrow night, we go. Tomorrow we keep moving and stick together and try to keep a low profile. Let's not attract too much attention to ourselves.
Again, Outlander! Again! Again!
It seemed as if every inhabitant of Claggartville was gathered around Ryan and the others on the side of the main dock, close by a weathered clipper ship with a falcon for a figurehead.
Smite the mark with the iron again, Outlander! Thou hast 9 scores from 9 casts! Not a harpooner in all New England could do better!
Don Phil smiled courteously at the skinny old man, who was handing him the long harpoon.
I'll try it for you.
Don't attract too much attention, man, as I see more.
Relax, One-Eye Chills. The more they like me, the less they'll worry about us running from them.
Don Phil turned away from Ryan to look among the open expanse of spray-slick cobbles, between the rows of eager faces, all of them looking at the heavy oak door that stood propped up against a pile of empty oil barrels. The white-bearded elder had paced it out, counting aloud, so that everyone there could ooh and ah. It was a full 40 paces. At the center of the door was a doubled circle of whitewash, not as large as the head of a child. The wood around it was chipped and scarred, where it had been used as a target or a test of skill for several years. The 7 friends had been walking through the ville in the bright morning sunshine. All the night's fog burned away. Whereas there had been mainly curiosity on their first walk around the streets and alleys, there was now suspicion, tainted with fear. It was obvious to Ryan that the shadow of Pyrrha Quad lay heavy over Claggartville. The news had spread that he had fallen out with the Salvation skipper. But they had been welcomed at the quay. Several men, some of them with bronzed complexions and long, sleek hair, had been competing with the long whaling spears. Innkeeper Rodriguez had mistaken the tall mescalero for a top harpooner, and the word had scurried along the lanes. Now the crowd wanted to see Donphil in action, pitted against the local champions.
You don't have to do it, Donphil. If they suss you aren't good with the spear, then they'll be even more watchful of us. Understand?
The Indian nodded. He understood. He'd taken the peculiar spear with its single steel flue and hefted it, feeling for the balance. The shaft was of stout elm, about 4 feet in length. The metal head was roughly 2 feet long, of iron, the cutting point of harder steel set in it. The old man, who seemed to be in charge of the friendly competition, nodded.
There is thy mark, heathen.
One of the young local harpooners nodded as well.
May thy god strike firm, a deep strike, and a rich harvest to thee.
And to thee, brother.
The Apache balanced himself carefully, fixing his eye on the small white blob upon the door. Ryan was uncomfortable surrounded by so many strangers, many of them hostile. But Donphil's eager participation had made it even more hazardous for them to try to pass on by. Ryan was a reasonable hand at throwing a knife, as was J.B. Jack, with his concealed blades, was the best that Ryan had ever known. But none of them had ever thrown spears. There was a blur of movement as the Apache released the iron.
4 ace lucky! Do it again, Outlander!
Don Fillmore did it again. 5 times from 5 casts. 9 times out of 9 throws. The noise from the crowd sent a flock of feeding gulls screeching from the calm waters of the harbor. The watchers broke ranks and pressed in on the strangers, but Ryan and the rest were almost forgotten. It was only as friends of the Mescalero that they were slapped on the back, their hands pumped, grins shining in their direction.
I'll give thee a 20th part of a voyage if thou wilt ship with me as harpooner.
A second captain jumped up and down in his anxiety to secure the services of this amazing giant, who could thread the iron through the eye of a needle.
An 18th!
No, thank you all. But I am here with my friends.
Thou needest work, all of you. I'll find labor for all 7 of you. E'en the snowhead muti and the wenches, if thou signest on for a year's hunting the right whale.
Aye, Boaz. But what lay dost thou offer the heathen iron man?
Enough, I warrant.
Best lay thou hast ever offered a harpooner was 170th. And that was for thy wife's sister's oldest son, was it not, Boaz?
Aye. And the worst hand with an iron I ever did see. When he fell from the top foreyard 10 days from harbor, it was for the best.
The crowd joined in the general merriment. But beyond them all, at the farthest end of the crowded quay, Ryan could see the quarterdeck of the Salvation. And the dark-clothed figure of its sinister skipper was leaning on a rail, smoking a white clay pipe. When her glance met Ryan's, the woman straightened and she spat in the water. Then she turned away and vanished down the nearest companionway. It cast a chill over the cheeriness of the moment for Ryan, though he said nothing to any of his friends. Back at the Rising Flukes, while they waited for Rodriguez to call them down to their supper, everyone congratulated Don Phil on his uncanny skill with the unwieldy harpoon.
I swear it was the most stunning example of skill I ever did see.
Jack sat cross-legged on a bed, honing one of his knives on the sole of his boot.
Uh-huh. Bastard double chiller.
How'd you get that good, Donphil?
Hunting. The war spear is not as long as the whaling iron, but it requires much the same skill. I have always had a good eye.
10 out of 10. Most men couldn't do that with a hand blaster.
Wins the gentleman a 10-cent stogie or a Cupid doll of his choice?
What's a Cupid doll, Doc?
I fear I don't recall, my dear child.
Then they were interrupted by the landlord of the Rising Flukes, calling them down to eat. Unless something went dreadfully wrong with their plans, it would be their last meal in Claggartville. The clam chowder was superb, rich and thick, steaming in the handmade pottery bowls. Rodriguez brought in a great pot of it, glowing from the fire, ladling it out in giant portions. A serving girl brought over a loaf of new-baked bread and a crock of salted butter. The tavern was oddly empty, with the exception of a dozen hard-faced men who'd commandeered the two tables on either side of the main door into the Rising Flukes. They spoke little, concentrating on their tankards of ale. Ryan hadn't noticed them before, and tugged Rodriguez by the sleeve.
They outlanders?
Who, master?
Near the door.
The landlord glanced around. Rather too casually, thought Ryan.
Oh, the lads. Just a few honest whaling men.
From which vessel?
Rodriguez tried to paste a smile more firmly in place on his pale face, but failed.
Which vessel?
Would it help your hearing if I cut off your damned ears?
No, masters. I'm not certain sure which sailor they hail from.
Christy wiped a dribble of chowder from her chin with a linen napkin.
Mm. But?
I think it may be the...
His voice dropped so much that all they could hear was an indeterminate mumbling. Doc tipped up his bowl to drain the last of the chowder.
I believe that our jovial host mentioned a name not unlike that of the Salvation.
Is it that? They are all from the Salvation?
They be.
Ryan glanced around.